Welcome back to Chasing Tone. Today, I have a very good friend and close accomplice in Wampler Pedals. Jason Wilding is with me today, and today we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff. So, just so in case you don't know, Jason Wilding is the guy that he's done a lot of the almost all the graphics on the pedals. He also does a lot of the social media stuff. So many times when you see a Facebook post or a Twitter rambling or an Instagram post, much of the time that's Jason, or it could be Alex as well, Alex Clay. But anyways, so you probably do know Jason, you just don't think you do. So anyways, here's the conversation with Jason. Let's go. Perfectly well executed. Oh, I wasn't recording. It's okay. I'm sure you can work another belt up, can't you?
I can do it. It's a rare talent. Well, it's not rare, but yeah, I can belch at all times. God, I got me some girls back in the day, I can tell you.
Oh, I bet you were the life of the party. Yeah.
Oh, I tell you. Pull in like a barge.
So I got the new Sedano amp. Not the new Sedano. Actually, this is an old Sedano, hand-wired by Mike Wynn.
When you say old, how old is it?
I don't know. Honestly, I really don't know. But it is glorious. And I mean glorious probably in the British sense, meaning really good.
You know? What's the difference between the British and American sense?
Because it seems like Americans don't really say glorious unless they're speaking about religion or something. Maybe. Seems that way to me here in the Midwest anyways. I could be completely wrong. I mean, America is quite different, where if you're in California and you're in Minnesota, those may as well be two completely different countries.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's radically different. So, yeah.
Glorious is a good word. It's a good word, though, glorious.
When talking about Sedano amps, it's the most appropriate.
So why is it so good then? What makes it so good?
Well, I mean, I had the Jet City. Like when we were doing this slow distortion, I had the Jet City. I didn't have an actual Sedano. I had played one, you know, here and there, but never. Yeah. I never had one in my possession to give it days worth of you know, the run through.
Geeking out on it.
Yeah, yeah. So the Jet City was cool. And it sounded good, but when I plugged in the Sedano, it was like notes were blooming, angels were singing. And the more I turned it up, the more it got crunchier, yet chewier yet crunchier, transparent and woody at the same time.
Woody and transparent. Aww.
Right.
It's just with got all of them.
With the vocal,
do you think that's where it started?
I think it all started with Sedano. I think Mike Sedano is to blame for guitar playing terms.
Does it make you pull a face when you play it? Do you do a guitar face?
Do I do a guitar face?
Yeah. Guitar face?
I probably did, because I actually, when I was playing the amp, I started out sitting down and I thought, what the hell? What's going on here? And so I went and put a strap on. I went and put a strap onto my guitar. And stood up and turned it up even more. And I was like, holy balls.
So that's how we're rating the quality of an amp, is how quick it makes you stand up. That could be a great video, actually. How quick does Brian stand up when playing an amp? Because you can rate it out of 10 for tone, for controls, and quickness of standing.
Oh, man. It's like, I played it and I'm like, this is Warren Haynes. Like, this sound is Warren Haynes. And so I pulled up Government Mule, which led to me playing guitar until 2 a.m.
Which is quite rare, playing for fun.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't happen, especially, you know, at night after the end of working all day. Generally, the last thing I want to do is play more guitar.
Yeah.
But yeah, I started putting on Government Mule. I'm like, this nails that. Like, this, it sounds like those tones. It's just, it's dead on exact.
So he just used the stock SLO, did he?
I think so. I got the chance to meet him once his tech, Eric, actually is a fan of ours. So, and super, both of them super nice guys.
But we like Eric then.
Yeah. Eric's awesome. I think Eric Avar, I think is his last name. Anyways, went backstage and got to look at all his gear, and there wasn't really any magical piece to it. It's like, yeah, it's a Sedano half stack and, you know, vibe pedal. I forget what was on there now, but it was just, regular old stuff.
What cab are you running it through? 412, 212?
I am running it through a Marshall cabinet. 412, because you got to,
Yeah, 212 sound better, though.
No, you can't run a Sedano through a 212, man.
I guarantee it. If you get
It's like drinking wine from a plastic cup. You can't
No, wine from a box. No, 212 will always sound better.
Not with the Sedano.
It will. Try it out.
No, that's like asking me to play. That's like asking me to play the Helix version of the Sedano and saying, "See, isn't that the same?" No,
I've got that. That's why I'm kind of. It sounds better for a 212 on a Helix.
No, it's just wrong.
It's just wrong.
It's like looking at a picture of food and going, "Look at that burger! Look how good that looks." Yeah, I get it. Yeah, it looks good, but nothing beats biting into that burger,
Yeah, and then the real burger comes out and it looks nothing like the one on the picture. I tell you, try it. A 212 will generally always sound better than a 412.
I will try it, but I like the 412, generally speaking, just because, I'm a child of the 80s. I grew up listening to George Lynch and Skid Row and Motley Crue and CC DeVille, all the major heavies.
All those other wholesome bands from the time.
Yes. And so when I think about massive amp tone, to me it's a Marshall cab. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I had a 412 back in the 90s and it was great. Slanted one. It was the 30th anniversary that Marshall did in 92, and it was blue and brass stuff on it. It was quite exclusive. I had the 30th anniversary head as well. That was 3-channel MIDI controllable. And I thought it was great until I played it through a 212, and it was just so much tighter.
Because it would be 412 tighter.
Get a bit loose around the bottom end and stuff. And it's,
they're very thumpy. Yeah.
Yeah. They move some air.
And I'm sure with a band, I would not take a 412 cabinet out, I doubt. Unless I was playing with like a 80s rock tribute band or something.
With the hair distortion.
With the hair distortion, exactly.
You posted that on social media the other day and we got all the usual comments. Did you see the comments?
I haven't read through the Wampler comments. I know I posted on my personal Instagram and I thumbed through those this morning. And my first thought when I read through the comments was, I should make like 5 of these. Just make 5 of them and sell them to people that just want something corny and tacky to put on their pedal board.
With a circuit in it or just with the fan in it?
Just the fan in it. Because that's all the pedal does. It just turns the fan on. Got a little string behind it that you couldn't see in the video that you can pull it and the fan tilts up. There's LEDs that turn on behind it. That's about it.
That was so funny though.
There's still comments on YouTube that happen that people are asking why it's not on our website.
I remember when we released the video, I had our Japanese distributor at the time wanted 25 of them. He thought it was a straight up real pedal. He said, this will be the biggest pedal you've ever done in Japan. Send me 25 now. When is it ready? And I say, well, sorry, it's actually just a blank pedal with a fan in the top and some LEDs. And he didn't believe me. He said, it sounds incredible. And I had to explain that it was a different thing in the back and, that you weren't actually playing through it. I don't think to this day he actually believes me.
You know what I should do? I should put a good distortion circuit in it, assuming we can still fit the fan in there. and yeah, make it a real pedal. But I bet you that fan would create so much noise in that circuit. You'd turn it on, you'd hear woo.
I think you could get the Plex distortion in it.
Yeah. The old school Superplex, that'd be cool in it.
Superplexes. Oh man, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Because that's still one of my favorite overdrive circuits.
I've been thinking about doing just a few here and there. We've talked, you know, you and I have talked about it before, not in while recording a podcast, but we have talked about, you know, maybe just a handful of some cool stuff every now and then. I've been really giving that a good think.
I'd love to, because some of those older circuits, when I hadn't played it for a couple of years, and I got it down the other day, and I was just blown away by the balls of it, the power. It's incredible. It's awesome.
It's a fun pedal. What was stupid is that we had like 18 different Plextortions. that was dumb.
Well, that's why we called the hair distortion the hair distortion, because we were kind of mocking ourselves by calling everything a distortion. Because we had the slow distortion, the plex distortion, and I think we talked about something else being a distortion. We almost called the velvet fuzz the fuzz distortion, but I think someone took that. But someone got that. I think it was EHX called it a fuzz distortion. Right as we were about to do it, and it was just like, ah, they've beaten us to it. So we should have a Terraform distortion.
Yeah, a compressed distortion.
Yeah,
a delay distortion. Yeah. It's not a bad idea.
I think we should do it. And no, this isn't April Fool, but we should do it. We should a Paisley distortion.
Speaking of April Fools, what was the pedal called? The finally buffed, totally buffed that we did for April Fools.
Totally right? Buffed, dude.
Yeah. I am still astonished that there's people posting on that YouTube video saying it's a waste of time. They're like, "What? This is the dumbest pedal ever. Why would I buy this?" And I'm like, "That's the point. That's the point. That's the joke."
Well, it kind of is the joke, but the joke is also that I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of stuff these days is going incredibly vintage, and people are really enjoying the side effects of the old pedals again.
Really?
Yeah, that's kind of why I...
why we're releasing a new digital platform. Perfect. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so you've spent like 2,000 on pedals, another 1,000 on a looper system to control them all, then you stick something like that in to make it sound like it's just a line of old pedals.
which goes to show you, as you, if you own a pedal company, if you just do the same thing over a period of time, it'll eventually come back around and you'll be cool again, I guess, right?
Well, it's just like our fashion sense, isn't it, really? When you're in your mid-40s, you just wear a pair of Converse, jeans, and a t-shirt, and eventually you'll be cool again.
Well, I think you wear a pair of Converse, so you're a little more hip than I am. Where, you know, I got to wear the tennis shoes, the dad shoes.
You know? I can't do it.
I got to. But my back, I can't wear anything flat footed. My back will kill me. Just horribly painful.
Do you groan when you get out of a chair?
I do. Like, and then I make sure whenever we're eating dinner with the kids, whenever that happens, I'm like, you know, when I was your age.
Yeah, you know? definitely. It's a simple pleasure in life when you're driving somewhere with the kids and you go somewhere near where you used to live or something and they started building on it and you go into a 5-minute rant about how this used to be fields and trees. And I used to play over there and there was a great oak tree there. And I look in the mirror and the kids are just looking out the window with their eyebrows raised thinking, oh, he's off again. Here we go again. They don't understand. That's the same with gear, though, isn't it?
And they got no respect. They got no respect for their elders these days.
Damn kids today.
But it is that way with gear. I think it's just romanticizing things. So, you know, I look back at the old pedals that we did, the Plextortion, the numerous Plextortions, the old Ecstasies, you know, with four knobs and everyone was different. Every pedal was different.
I mean, how many versions of the Plextortion was there? I think I've seen six. Five or six.
I honestly didn't track any of that stuff. So maybe six or seven, something like that. And then we did Superplex. We did Superplextortion. And
Ecstasy had a Super Ecstasy at one point, didn't it?
Oh, we did for a minute. Yeah, Super Ecstasy. I forgot about that.
What was that? That had a boost in the front? Was that a pre-game boost or a post boost? Or
I honestly don't remember at all. I doubt at that time it would have been like a separate circuit. It probably was just increasing the gain in it.
So it was like a boost switch like the original Pinnacle had, just to take it from a switch.
Sort of, but that's op-amp based, where the Pinnacle is not op-amp based. So it would
my eyes are glazing over as you start talking about chips.
Well, see, it's about the negative feedback, really. If you want to get down, it's all about that. Yeah,
totally. So that's the only kind of feedback to have, I find, when you're in a pedal.
Positive feedback. That's not rock and roll, is it? Positive feedback. You want negative feedback.
Positive feedback is completely different than negative feedback.
It's a one-star review on TripAdvisor, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, this daddest joke of them all.
Sorry. I need to know more about your amp. I need to know more about this Soldara.
Okay, so it does have a clean channel that's actually pretty good, man. The Jet City did not have a clean channel.
What's its heritage? What do you think it sounds? Where did it come from?
If I recall right, it's a modified Plexi with an extra gain stage and a bunch of crap changed in between. I'm not looking at the schematic, but I think the 5150 PV or the 6550, whatever it is now, I think that was actually really closely based on the Sedano with extra gain stages as well.
Really? I didn't know that. I thought that was a fairly new circuit, that one.
And that's what I've heard from other amp builders as well. I don't look at nearly as many amp schematics as I do pedal schematics. So it didn't interest me enough to really dive into that. But
because now I'm gassing for a Soldano.
Everybody needs a Sedano SLO-100. Or you know what? I mean, I know Sedano's getting ready to make a 20-watt version.
Oh,
I bet you that would be killer. Or maybe they do already. I don't know. I have seen the SLO-20 mentioned in. I mean, keep in mind we work with Boutique Amps Distribution, who also now works with Sedano. So.
Interesting thing about that was how much headroom the clean channel has.
It's got a ton.
Clean all the way, is it?
It is. It really is. I take that back. When you turn it up all the way, there's a little bit of dirt, just a smidge. Not anything like a Fender amp where when you crank it up, you know, it sounds like Joe Walsh, Rocky Mountain Way, you know.
Oh, that's a good tone.
Yeah. I think that was actually a Plexi though, but that's what a Crank Deluxe always reminded me of, is like Rocky Mountain Way type stuff.
I always thought he was Plexi at the time, wasn't he? I'm sure
I think that was a Plexi, but those amps still get a pretty good crunchy, dirty tone, man.
Yeah.
You know, the amp I never have been able to get to work for me is like an AC-30 or AC-15. I respect people that can get those tones from it, like Paisley, for example. I just, every time I plug into one, I'm like,
I think it's one of those amps that responds to how you play. And unless you play in a certain way, it doesn't quite work.
Yeah, and I just always wanted to be a blackface, you know, a deluxe reverb or a twin or something. And it's just not that, you know.
Yeah,
it sounds cool. It's really nice and bell-like and has good chime. It just do it for me.
The greatest live guitar tone I ever heard came from 9 Vox AC-30s.
Queen.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just a treble booster.
Right.
That he now has on his strap. It's a portable one. Freya, I think, make it. And I've never heard a guitar sound like it. It was enormous. I couldn't believe it. I just sat with the first two songs, apparently, the people I were with were laughing at me because I was just, my mouth was open. My jaw was virtually in my lap. Couldn't believe what I was hearing. Because every time I've played a Vox, even with a treble booster, it doesn't sound like that.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't for me either, man.
Maybe I needed to play eight more at the same time. I don't know, but it.
Or maybe you just need to be Brian May. You know?
Yes, yeah, tone is in the fingers. But I played the guitar. You seen that?
I
played his guitar, and wow.
Did you use a sixpence or whatever you guys call
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's a lovely story. I won't go too far into it because we'll be here forever. But a good friend of mine, Jamie Humphreys, used to play with Brian. And he knows Brian's tech very well. And we went to see Queen with Jamie. And Jamie arranged for us to go to the after show party. And he had a word with Brian's tech. And they took me to one side into this little room to play the Red Special, the original one. And he gave me the sixpence that Brian had been using all night. And I've got it upstairs in the house.
Have you spent it on a pack of smokes yet?
No, the sixpence went out in 1971. I don't think they're actually cheaper to buy on eBay than a pick is. A Dunlop pick costs more than a 50s sixpence that Brian May uses. You can buy them still by the bag load.
So what you're saying is that we need to make sixpences.
Definitely. You've got to get the right nickel compound there. But man, that guitar is, when you're given it, you're blown away by the history because everything just comes forward. You think about Live Aid, you think about the Freddie Mercury tribute concert, you think about Bohemian Rhapsody and all those great songs, the history of it. And then you think about all the people that must have played it in the past. And then you play it and it's horrible. It's just horrible. It feels like a teenager made it 60 years ago with his dad. That's a first time build. And, you know, it has never been refretted.
Really?
The frets are almost non-existent. It's the biggest neck I've ever felt on a guitar. And it's just, you kind of sit there because, I mean, Jamie's played it loads of time. And he was looking at me and he was almost laughing because he knew what my reaction was going to be. And it was just,
like my PRS. Not at all.
Yeah. I wanted to give it back to Pete and say, that's a piece of crap. Give me something decent. But, you know, but it was just, it's horrible. And so I did the thing that, you know, it blasphemy. When he gave me the guitar and he gave me the sixpence, I started playing Queen riffs on it. And Jamie said to me very discreetly and subtly, you can't play Queen riffs on that, with lots more foul language in it. And everyone laughed. But it's just, it's crazy. And then he gave me a rundown of the history of it, the pieces of wood, where they came from, the knitting needle as a whammy bar. Had a look inside. What? Yeah.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, well, the actual whammy bar itself was part of a saddle from a bicycle, and the end of it, you know how old Fender whammy bars had that plastic knob on the end?
Yeah.
He made one of them out of one of his mum's knitting needles, and it's still the original one on the end.
Really?
The neck is held on by one bolt, be about 3/4 of an inch wide, with just a bolt and a washer underneath it. When you push the whammy bar down and look under the bridge, there's this huge spring that was from a bike. The inlays were buttons that he stole from his mum's haberdashery box and filed down and sanded down and put in.
Wow.
It's insane. That's insane.
How does it, like, how do you even play that in tune?
I don't know. I couldn't play it for anything longer than a couple of minutes because it was almost fretless and the neck felt like the big end of a baseball bat.
Right.
But it melts your head when you think about the guitar. You think about all the people that must have played that guitar over the years. Because Queen have been massive since the early 70s and they've done gigs with everyone. And that guitar is iconic. So you think about the people who must have played it. Melts your head.
Yeah,
that'd be crazy. It's horrible. Fortunately, the production ones they make now are really nice. It's actually got frets on it, and the neck's nice. And
surprised Fender hasn't gone after him, or Paul Reed Smith, or someone like that.
Well, Paul Reed Smith would spend 3 years developing one. And then it would come out, and it would look fairly similar.
That's true. Accurate.
No comment on John Mayer. Which I don't know if you noticed, but our colleague Alex has bought another Silver Sky. Have you seen it?
Yes. So we probably need to. Well, so I explained, like, at the intro, Alex helps you do, you know, social media and a lot of other stuff, Alex has a habit with buying and selling gear, specifically the Silver Sky.
I think it's his hobby, isn't it?
He's like, I got to have this guitar. And then he gets it for a month. He's like, I really don't need this guitar. I need to sell it. He's done it several times. And then finally I'm like, never sell this guitar. You're driving me crazy.
The group of us that mod the tone group that we have on Facebook have got a kind of a bet going how long he keeps it for. How long before he flips the Silver Sky again?
It's an office pool. Yeah.
Yeah. He said actually they fixed the issues he had with the one he had first time around, they fixed the issues. So I don't know if this is a second batch or a third batch he's on that he's got now, but some of the niggles he had with it have been sorted out. So he likes it much more.
Right. He was saying like the first one he had static issues or something crazy. Like
Across the scratch plate or something that when he touched it, it would, you could hear it shorting out through the pickups.
Yeah. How weird is that? Like I don't even know how you would make that happen.
I mean, it doesn't happen on any guitar over £100 that I've ever played.
I've never experienced that.
Some of the cheap guitars from the 80s that, you know, were coming out the Far East when they first started building guitars had that. Because it was a design flaw. I don't understand how but they've sorted it anyway, so.
Right, yeah.
But yeah. I know loads of people have got one now, and they think it's absolutely the best Strat they've ever played.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Dave Wiener's got one, and he can't stop playing it. I don't know if you've seen Dave's stuff he does on Gitopia. He's always using his Silver Sky, and he absolutely adores it.
Huh. That's crazy. I mean, crazy in a good way, but I'm not a big Strat fan myself. So
I was just going to say it's still a Strat, though, isn't it? So yeah. It's not my bag.
If Paul Reed Smith made a Telecaster, then we'd be having a much different conversation right now.
It would be the best thing ever, obviously.
if Brent Mason, I know he's got a Paul Reed Smith signature model, but you know, if he made the gray Telecaster with Paul as well, you know, I'd probably be fanboy.
That's the PRS I've got is the Brent one,
right?
And I kind of wish they'd done a Telecaster because that would have been. It sounds when you coil tap it down, it does sound a bit telly like. It sounds more telly than it does Strat.
Yeah, to me, like I've only heard you play it. I've heard you play it more than Brent. I don't think I've ever played Brent's, but like when I hear you play it, to me it seems like it's not really like anything else though. Like it doesn't seem like a Tele, it doesn't seem like a Strat.
It sits in the middle. It doesn't have the punch of the Tele, and it doesn't have the edge of the Strat. It's kind of the boring middle child of the two. If the Tele was the older brother and the Strat was, you know, the Tele is the older sensible brother. The Strat is the young tearaway, and there's the middle one that doesn't really do anything. That's probably going to get a job in accounting. That's what the tone is.
you're not selling this, you know that doesn't sell the guitar, right?
Well, they don't make it anymore, so.
They don't? But, they don't make the Brent Mason
version? No, they stopped a couple of years ago.
I had no idea.
Yeah, the good thing about it, though, is because it's a humbucker and you tap it down and there's no signal difference between humbucker and single coil. They're the same output. But it retains the tonal characteristics of the humbucker and the single coil. So when you're gigging and you go to single coil, you don't have to put a boost on to try and bring your levels up. It's all the same. I don't know how they did that.
So
that's why I really like it. So I can get both sounds convincingly.
Right. Well, you know, I have this SE, this Paul Reed Smith SE, right?
The bluey green one?
Yeah. So And you know, I'm not a big fan of it. Like I bought it because a lot of our customers had this type of guitar and I needed something like that so I could, you know, when working out circuits, you know? So I think I mentioned it on a podcast a while back, Von Scow, who makes Von Scow pickups, reached out to me and said that he makes pickups specifically for those types of guitars. I mean, as well as other guitars as well, but like he has a huge amount of people that come to him asking for the same thing. They love the look of the guitar, the way it feels. They're just not crazy about the pickups. And apparently, so anyways, I was talking to him and I got a pair of replacement pickups for it. I got to put those in, probably do a video on that as well. But apparently, yeah, he turns that guitar into something much better with his replacement pickups.
So the pickups are the weak link.
That's what I've heard. Now, again, I haven't changed the pickups myself yet. So that's we'll do that on video. But
yeah, that could be quite funny watching you change pickups.
Oh, I hate changing pickups, man. I hate it. Oh my gosh, I hate it. It's like, ugh.
Let's face it, that involves you. You know, handling a soldering iron, and that's not your favorite thing to do in the world ever anyway, is it?
Well, not only that, we also have changing strings like 1,000 times. You know, if you have a couple of different sets of pickups that you're changing between, then that means that you have to take the strings off, put the new pickups in, and then put the strings back on, you know? And I hate that. It's just, I can't horrible. Be asked to do that.
No. You know? I'm breaking out into a cold sweat just thinking about it.
So let's switch gears a little bit with this Terraform that we have been working on for months now.
Extensively.
What's, you know, we showed it NAMM, which apparently stands for not April, maybe May. You know, at this point, maybe June. Heck, I don't know.
It'll be out when it's ready. It'll be out when it's ready.
But actually, you are the one that has done a lot of the sound work on several different of the algorithms, several different of the effects on it.
Yes. I've been quite involved in it, which has been great. It's great fun to be able to. You forge the sound. I mean, some of them I don't understand, so I've let you and Jake.
You're like, you know, I have no idea what a bandpass is, but this is completely useless.
Yeah, you know, what does an envelope filter actually do? And conversations we've had like that. But I've particularly enjoyed getting very nerdy with the rotary.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds incredible because I had one of those moments back again in the 90s. I played in a band and we had an organ player and he got a 122 Leslie and we had it in our rehearsal studio. And for a laugh, I plugged my guitar into it and was blown away by the huge sound of it. Even when the speakers weren't really rotating, it was just huge. Right. So when we did when we were looking at the algorithm for the rotary, I kept going on about, oh yeah, it's got to be a bit dirty and it's got to compress in this certain way. And poor old Jake was having to try and work out what I was actually saying in a technical phase because I can't explain it very well. Right. And
We should pause there real quick. Jake is the actual engineer that's writing the code for this and helping us. He works for us basically. It works for Walmart, but he's our real engineer behind the scenes.
Yeah, he's the one that understands the digital side and has to decipher all of our nonsense.
We're like, it needs to be a little spongy, Jake. How do you write that in code?
Yeah. What's the code for Woody? And then, we should actually move on from that one before I say something inappropriate. But yeah, I mean, he did a great job. He sent us loads of different versions of clipping circuits, and we went back and forth saying, you know, it needs to clip this much, and then you came back and said, well, no, actually I play a bit harder and it's clipping too much, so we had to find the happy medium. We didn't want it to sound like it was distorting, we just wanted to give it that width and the size of the rotary that I remember playing back then.
Right, the sound of the cabinet compressing and when you hit it with a loud signal, you know.
Yeah. I can't. It's the one I'm really looking forward to people getting their hands, you know, playing. Because I've been using the one in the Helix, because I use a Helix FX Live these days. And the rotary in it is very good, but it's nowhere near the one that I'm playing here when we're testing out the modules. It's nowhere near as good as that one. So I think we've nailed this.
I do wonder. I mean, we talked about this at some point, but it is a stereo thing. It can be mono as well. But I wonder how many people are actually going to use it in stereo. I mean, I personally think that that's where the magic is in it. You know,
it definitely that's when it sounds its biggest. But that's the same with the choruses and the flanges and the phases, though, isn't it? When you put it into that stereo field, it sounds incredible. But if you look through the boards that are posted on the hundreds of forums on social media, very few rigs are played in stereo.
Which just totally
regular
me.
Rigs.
You know, because, you know, that's what you get. You get a lot of people asking for a stereo delay. I mean, how many times have you been asked about making the Fotape Echo stereo?
Oh, it's become a bit of an internet joke, isn't it? When, you know, we release a dirt pedal, someone would instantly say underneath it, what, no stereo, no MIDI, no presets, you know, kind of laughing at all the people that would say these things. But I think it's the modeling guys are all using stereo now, and the studio guys. But I think your dad rockers like me that go out, you know, several times a week, we can't be asked to take two amps out. It's heavy.
It hurts my back.
Well, that's why I got the Helix HX, because my board was hurting my back. So I didn't want to go back and have another operation on my back.
That's true. You did have a gigantic pedal board too, though.
Oh, it was brilliant. Yeah. Yeah.
The 45 pedals. It probably weighed 80 pounds.
It was 70 pounds, I think, including the case. It had a full case in it. And I kept my Quilter spare amp in there, because I have a 100-watt Quilter as a spare amp, and all my cables in there. And it was 70 pounds. My board is now a third of the weight it used to be, because on there I had three dirt pedals, a compressor, two Strymans, a reverb pedal, a harmony pedal. Then I had the looper to control it. It was over two tiers. It was a monster board. I absolutely loved it. But I just, my back couldn't contend with it anymore. I couldn't even get it out of my car. And so I sold a lot of it and bought the HX FX, which is a bit of a compromise, but it does the job really well.
Is it point to point?
Does the job really well.
Is it point to point and true bypass?
Yeah, I think it is. It's 100% analog. it's 100% analog. Yeah, yeah. It's point to point, and I do think it's got a couple of 12 AX7s in there as well. Yeah. For some of the gain stages.
Oh yeah, it's got to. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got to, because you know, because it's real, man. we've got to keep it real.
Have you messed with changing the impulse responses on it?
No, because I run back line.
Oh, okay, so you bypass that. I thought you were running direct into for the front of house though.
No.
Oh.
No.
See, Mike, you go into your amps or amp and then mic that?
No, we don't even mic. We tend to play smaller places, and sometimes we mic, but you know, if we do, just put a 57 slightly off center.
It looks like you played some outdoor stuff though. You mic for that, don't you?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we've done a couple of local festivals, but we're just a cover band, so we don't really do things like that. But yeah, usually mic for that. But I am seriously thinking about somehow being able to use, I don't know whether to use a two notes or the new Boss thing, mm-hmm. or you know, if I only knew someone who was really into IRs that you know had their own pedal company or.
Yeah, I don't know who that would be.
I don't know. Maybe I should ring Robert. I don't know.
Yeah, you might ask Robert Keeley about that. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I would love to, but right now it's, you know, I get, because, you know, I've been playing live for over 30 years and I'm used to hearing everything coming from behind me. And when I hit a low chord, my jeans pressed to the back of my legs. Right. You know, that air movement. I don't think I'm quite ready to lose that.
Right.
Because loads of people I know use in-ear monitoring and stuff, and they say it's great, and I've listened to it, but I like to be in the middle of it, which is why my hearing is so bad.
Yeah, I mean, that would do it, you know, unless you're using earplugs of some sort or something.
Yeah, I should do that. We had a case this week, actually. We were playing on Saturday night, and we were getting a bit excitable. And I'm stood right next to the ride cymbal, and the drummer was hitting it so hard, my hearing actually, self-defense, shut down for a couple of seconds.
Oh, wow, that's scary.
It felt like it felt like my head was had a pillow go around it. And it was right in the middle of a solo as well. So I did the end of the solo, effectively deaf. And it scared the living daylights out of me. I turned around to my wife, who was stood side of the stage, and I just said, I can't hear anything. And she kind of looked at me. And it happened to the drummer at the same time. His hearing did the same thing at the same time.
Maybe he should stop using that
cymbal. Which I've never heard.
You should take that cymbal off.
We had words outside afterwards. We did have words outside afterwards once our hearing had come back. And he kind of said that he won't hit it quite so hard going forward. But it was scary. It was really scary because I've been to some really loud gigs and, you know, I've been in the middle of some really loud situations, but I've never had my hearing. It was almost like there was something in my brain that said, nah, that's too much, and it flipped the switch.
Right. Huh.
And then it flicked back on again afterwards.
Yeah. I'm usually pretty careful with that.
Scary.
Yeah. There was, of course, times in the past where I did things like that, but anymore, I don't. This Sedona was the first time for a long time that I've cranked an amp up that loud in the same room with it. And and immediately I did, I'm like, you know, I played for a little bit, and then I realized my ears were ringing massively. I'm like, yeah, that was a bad idea. I shouldn't do that.
Do you have to do that thing where you hold your nose and blow down it to make your ears pop out again?
Never tried that. That sounds painful.
Yeah, because the top end is the first thing that goes. You know when you're in a car or you're in a plane and you can feel your head getting fuller, so you hold your nose and blow down your nose and your ears pop out again?
Oh, I just yawn and do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, seriously. Yeah, I can't. If I pinch my nose and blow, I'll blow an eardrum out. At least that's my fear.
Really?
Well, that's my fear. I don't know. Maybe it's not. You know, maybe it's uncounted a bit.
I'm going to be scared to do that now. I'm going to be halfway through a gig, do that down through my nose, and my ears will pop out.
Just yawn. That looks better from the stage, anyways.
I yawn quite a lot when I'm playing, anyway.
It's like
that's just a critique of my own playing.
Especially when someone's yelling for Brown Eyed Girl or Lay Down Sally, right?
we do Lay Down Sally, and we do Free Bird.
Oh yeah. See, this is why I don't play out anymore because I can't be asked to play those songs. No.
See, it's quite rare over here because no one plays that stuff over here. We're the only band around here that plays those kind of songs.
See, that's so crazy. It's the bands here in the Midwest, I mean, outside of like Nashville and places like that, obviously, but the bands here in the Midwest are still playing the same songs as they were, you know, in 1995 or whatever. There is some bands playing some newer country stuff. I'll give you that. But for the most part, your average bar band is still playing Brown Eyed Girl and, you know, Jimmy Buffett.
We are the only band that I know of in this part of the country that play Copperhead Road by Steve Earle.
Oh, yeah. I can't be asked to play that song either.
No. That kind of music just isn't popular over here.
Do you play Merle Haggard?
We do Working Man Blues now and then.
Now and then? That should be like the opening and the closing song. You know?
Pardon?
So that should be the opening and the closing song.
What, Working Man Blues?
Yeah. It's a fantastic song.
If we just do like a 45-minute version of it.
Right. Yeah. So that's one set, you know?
That's one set. And then the second set, you just do Freebird with a half an hour solo.
Oh, yes. I can't get into the Freebird, man. I can't do it. I can only play a guitar solo in G for so long. And after that, I'm like, I'm bored. I'm bored.
Well, you don't have to play in G. You can do the jazz version like I do and just play anything.
Well, that would mean I'd have to know how to play jazz. And I struggle with the...
Well, I loosely say jazz. That just mean playing wrong notes and dressing it up.
Oh, I can play wrong notes all day long. I'm great at that.
Yeah. You're expert at
that.
And
they're like, Brian, we're actually in B flat. And I'm like, I've been playing in A sharp this entire time. Oh, my gosh.
I see. Then you say, oh, is that... B flat major. And then, well, I'm playing in G minor, and it's effectively the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say that. I mean, yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, and now all the nerds are going to go, "No, it's not." This is it. When Tom Quayle texts me and say, "You know what you said there? That's not quite right." I know.
All right. Well, that's a good place to end for today. If anyone,
no, the good place to end of the day is you sending me the Soldano.
Oh, I should totally do that. Let me just put an envelope. You know, I'll just get a bubble.
Shipping won't be much.
Bubble mailer. You know, and just put it in a big bubble mailer. Put it in a trash bag full of styrofoam. I'm sure it'll arrive just fine.
Yeah, it'll be fine. You've done worse.
All right, so if anyone has any comments or questions or thoughts or insights, you can always email podcast@wamplerpedals.com. You can email Jason if you want at podcast@wamplerpedals.com, and I'll get you in touch with him. I'm sure you would love to talk to Jason about, you know, his Converse sneakers. And make sure you check out our Facebook groups, too, if you like talking about guitar gear. It's called the Wampler Pedals Tone Group. And we'll talk to you next week with a new podcast. See you later.